It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, let's spend the remainder of the hour with an Iowan who is, at least by the blog 538, Nate Silvers, the fabulous prognosticator. Nate Silver calling her on his blog America's Best Pollster in Politics. Ann Selzer's been with us before, president of Selzer & Company, a polling firm based in West Des Moines. So good you could join us again, Ann.
Happy to be here.
With all that has happened in November, I don't know what it feels like to you, but it's been less than 3 months that since we've had that election. That seems like an eternity ago.
Doesn't it?
The dust has settled a little bit on that surprise outcome of the election. I'd like to get your view on what happened in terms of polling. Give us your autopsy.
Well, now, hold on. Autopsy implies that polling is dead.
So. Okay. Well, I suppose it implies something. Okay, your Monday morning quarterbacking.
Very
How about
good,
that one?
Good.
Is that better?
Yeah. You know, what? Here's what I will say. I think that for me, I'll tell you my personal experience first, but then speak for the industry. This was an election about the electorate. So if you remember back in the Clinton years, the war room had a sign that said, "It's the economy, stupid."
Mm-hmm.
And the sign I would have put in the war room this year was, "It's the electorate, stupid." It there was a mood that was sick and tired of the whole way that government was working. And that was on really both sides, but felt more strongly on the Republican side. We had, you know, just a few key pieces of polling data that really, to me, summed up what I saw happening and the willingness to take a risk with a candidate who had not had political experience, who would promise to shake things up. There was a willingness to say, look, I don't know what that might look like, but I know what electing the same kind of person who'll do things the same way will look like, and I don't want that anymore.
So in the general election, we had one outsider, the
yes.
shake-it-up guy who won, and the more establishment figure, Hillary Clinton. So you're saying basically the establishment figure didn't, on the other side, wouldn't have had a chance or would have less of a chance?
What it created was an opening because there was a hunger for something different, and had she been a different kind of candidate or a different kind of campaign, a different kind of message, there's no doubt that Hillary Clinton could have won that election. But the sort of stars aligned against her in a number of ways, one of which was the mood of the electorate, one of which was the ongoing battle with the FBI in terms of that investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And what led to, there's a rather stark chart that says, look, from election to election, about the same number of Republicans show up to vote, but the number of Democrats declined markedly from 2008-2012. Down to 2016. So there were people deciding very late to support Trump, and there were people very late deciding, I'm not going to show up on the Democratic side and vote at all. So the idea that it was a Republican surge, I don't think that was there, but a pullback on the Democratic side.
Mm-hmm. Iowa, in the weeks running up to the election, was put in the Trump column. But we had this going right into the election day. We had the blue wall, the upper Midwest, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. What happened to Clinton's blue wall?
Well, obviously, you know, we polled in Iowa, so we saw that was going for Trump early. For Bloomberg Politics, we also polled in Ohio relatively early and saw that going for Trump. And, you know, in hindsight, I can think, well, why didn't we wonder about Michigan and Wisconsin? If you go back and look at the polling that was done in those states, it was all Clinton all the time. You had to go back to early October to see one poll where Trump was even close in those two states. So no one had said, hey, things look shaky here in Wisconsin and in Michigan. Pennsylvania, all Republicans always seem to think that they can win it, and Democrats then seem to take it for granted, and no one saw Pennsylvania coming either. So it was, I can't tell you that any pundit pollster put together an electoral map that showed Donald Trump could win. But, you know, part of the problem we've had is that while there's typically been a lot of polls, a lot of them have changed their methodologies, and they sort of rely more on past voting behavior to model what this future election is going to look like. So if you think that Michigan and Wisconsin will always be blue, for some pollsters, that affected the way their polls came out.
Mm-hmm. As I understand it, in my rudimentary understanding of polling, and correct me if I'm wrong, you need to determine who will vote, and then you need to determine how this selected group will vote. Are those the two basic questions?
Those are the two basic questions. The determining who will vote, there are all sorts of ways that pollsters go about it. I go about it in the most simplistic way possible, which is I let them tell me. A lot of pollsters do a complicated model based on several factors. So not only your intent to vote, but if you voted before, if you know where your polling place is, if you're following the election. You know, there are a lot of things that historically have been good predictors of whether people will vote. But if you're a first-time voter and, you know, you don't know where your polling place is, then they're going to discount your vote because they think you have a lower propensity to vote. And the way that they've decided that is based on past behavior. They're also taking a look if you are a panel of people that a lot of polling companies are now forming, that is either volunteers or people who are paid a minimum amount that they can go back to again and again. Well, what's the composition of your likely voter look like? What are you going to decide in terms of the age range, the racial makeup, in terms of party ID? And this year, for the first time, what your education level is. And if you look to past elections and decide that you're going to use that as a guide for what this future election is going to look like, you're going to miss.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to miss.
So what are the lessons for polling and pollsters going forward right now? What is your takeaway? And should be the takeaway of others. So for a 2018 or 2020 election.
Right. Well, we're still figuring this out. So please know that there's
okay,
a little bit of shakeup
point?
In the polling industry. But I think for me, you know, our polls looked pretty good. And therefore, I think my method, which says don't assume what this future electorate is going to look like, have a method that will reveal it to you. And I think that other firms that are doing other things are going to have to figure out how to rejigger their methodology so that they're not blinded to change.
Mm-hmm. What are your worries, your concerns possibly about the polling industry as an industry, how people perceive polls in light of this last election? I think I said it, you know, at the beginning, I said, will we ever trust the pollsters again? You're producing a commodity, and now do people believe in your commodity as much as they did before?
Well, you know, there was certainly a media fixation on polls and of every ilk, and with no sort of sorting of, well, this is a good poll and they have a reliable track record, or this is not such a good poll, let's not even show that on the air or print it in our paper. Every poll got its time in the sun. So that was a little bit of the problem, that fixation. But then when so many of the polls turned out to not get the Electoral College right, then there was sort of this equal and opposite reaction from the fixation, which is that people just threw up their hands and said, you know, a pox on all their houses. First thing we do, let's kill all the pollsters, you know, as if it's the pollsters' fault. Well, a little bit in terms of setting expectations. But I think, you know, we're a data-driven society, culture, more than we've ever been. So people are going to look to data, and they're going to want to have an idea of what's going on. Because imagine trying to sort your way through an election if you don't have any polling data. How do you know? Just yeah. Because a candidate says they're leading, or they're doing the best of any candidate ever. How do you know if you don't have some sort of independent guide to that?
Ann Selzer, zoom in for a moment on Iowa specifically, our political landscape in this state. And I guess I've asked this to many people, but we've got a red state, right?
By any objective measure, you have Dave Loebsack as sort of
the
standout.
Southeast part, yeah, okay.
Right.
So tell us, describe what you see in our political landscape right now, 2017.
Well, I think we've seen this sort of red tide gradually grow across Iowa. So this is no big surprise that in this past election we took yet another step, that is giving the Iowa Senate to the Republican side. I think what happens now is that the Democrats are going to need to figure out who they've got in the pipeline. Have they been neglecting cultivating candidates that could come in and do a good job? And what happens with the mood of the electorate? Is it, do they, you know, now that the Republicans have everything they've ever wished for, what do they do with it?
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be a new evaluation method to take a look at what it is that they want. So it's a burden when you have control of the entire state of Iowa.
Give us a glimpse of how polling is changing in terms of the technology and how, I guess, people are changing. The way we communicate with each other is changing with social media, with cell phones and cutting the cable, no more landlines and all that. That's a big problem, isn't it?
You know, these are problems that have happened relatively slowly over time, but so there have been adjustments the industry has been making along the way. Different firms are adjusting different ways. So there's a seminar next week on how to do polling by text, for example, how to do this, that, and the other thing. There are constraints on our industry in terms of how we contact people. But you have a company like SurveyMonkey, who's become quite a successful company in offering cheap and easy ways for companies or organizations and membership groups to poll their membership, their customers, and then they tack on at the end, so can we ask you a few political questions?
Mm-hmm.
So without any additional cost to them, they're able to gather tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people saying what their politics are. They had some hits and they had some misses, but there isn't anything out there in terms of how people communicate. The pollsters aren't thinking about how can we legally be in that soup.
Mm-hmm. Is getting more difficult for pollsters as these things develop?
I used to say that every election cycle it gets more difficult, and then I started saying, well, you know, every year, and now I say every nanosecond it gets more difficult.
Are you polling anything now?
You know, we don't publish our schedule.
Okay,
of when
you can't
we
say a word about it, can you? Okay, okay, a big void
you know
there for
why
my
that
creative
is?
Brain to think about. All right.
No, you know why that is? Because it used to be that people would organize political events or something around when we were going to be polling.
Okay.
And we don't like being in the middle of that.
Okay.
We want to measure what's actually happening.
Ann Selzer, let me toss you this one in the final minute here. Donald Trump's disapproval rating increasing 6 points in the last few days. This is according to Gallup. This is after President Trump set a record for receiving the lowest initial job rating, approval rating, the highest disapproval rating, just days after his inauguration. As a pollster, what's your reaction to those numbers?
My reaction is I think that any poll has a shelf life of about 2 days because so much is happening so fast. I think it was Joe Scarborough on Morning Joe said, look, nobody stops you if you're going 90 miles an hour. And the Trump administration appears to be going 90 miles an hour.
Yes,
and
yes.
The electorate is still trying to sort of catch up to this. So, well, I have a little bit of caution with any poll number that I see. Well, how long does that last?
Also, perhaps too soon to be very significant. We're only just not even 2 weeks into the administration?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. Always wonderful to talk with you, Ann Selzer. Thanks for coming into our studio today. President of Selzer & Company, polling firm based in West Des Moines. And thank you again.
My pleasure.
Okay. Tomorrow, Politics Day. You won't want to miss it. Our analysts, political scientists, Donna Hoffman, Scott Peters of the University of Northern Iowa. Of course, tonight, the night that Donald Trump announces his nominee for the Supreme Court in prime time. We're going to pick apart that nominee, so to speak, and other features on our quickly changing political landscape. River to River is produced by Claire Roth, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon, with help from Anna Williams. So we also had help from John Pemble today. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.